And this is the conclusion now, nearly anyhow. You must understand this, he says, beloved. Let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, let everyone be quick to listen and slow to speak. I should reflect on that a bit more. One of my friends in the seminary told me, Mick, you haven't got an unpublished thought. He also said, you've got the greatest mind of the 11th century. Because I love the arcane things. Neither were meant to be compliments. But he could have said the second greatest mind, I suppose that would have. Anyhow, quick to listen and slow to speak. What are we to listen? Listening, again, is faith. We must listen to every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Every word. That's the hard bit. Jesus quotes it too. Some people will only listen to the Bible, as though every word that God's ever spoken is in the Bible.
And you like that, right?
Yeah. And so we're to listen to every word. God has already planted his word in our soul. And Deuteronomy again, chapter 30, it's very near you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart. Observe it. James later will talk about this implanted word. It's in your soul. It's given to, when you're born, conceived and born as a little baby, you're full of God's word already. Keep it. Preserve it. Wear the white garment for the rest of your life. The implanted word has power to save your soul. Then he says, be slow to anger. For your anger does not produce God's righteousness. So we've got two things to talk about there, at least the best I'm able to. Briefly, talk about anger, but then I mainly want to spend time on the last phrase, which is a very Pauline phrase, by the way, too. But it's obviously part of the Christian vocabulary, and Paul and James share it and have the same idea about it. So, first of all, slow to anger. Now, James isn't a psychologist, neither am I guess, but we've learnt a lot in 2,000 years, I think, and psychology is one of the great sciences and to which we should be very grateful. And I'm not saying it's only recently that we've seen this distinction, but I'll share with you the distinction that's obvious to me. There are two kinds of anger. There are probably hundreds of kinds of anger, but let's simplify it. There are two. One is when I lose my temper. I'm angry because I'm upset, because you're doing something that I don't want. You're doing something that inconveniences me, let's say. Some temperaments have a lot more of that than others. Doesn't matter, but I've got very little of that. In fact, I've got too little of it, probably. So that, you know, I've got other things we could talk about later. But anger is just by temperament, isn't a big problem with me. So I don't actually understand it all that much, because I don't tend to lose my temper. But there is that anger, which we're all familiar with, and some under pressure have a lot of it, and some hardly any, and it's neither virtuous or, I'm not saying anything, I'll depend on your temperament. But there's another anger, and I haven't got much of this either, but I wish I had more, and I wish you had more, and I wish we all had more. The anger that is concerned for justice. The anger of God, we've talked about, just anger is the word we've sometimes used, where we will not bear to see another person put down. If more of us were angry about the way Australia treated the refugees on the Tampa and so on at the time, we would have had a different political decision being made, and we've done some very bad things that we're suffering from now, and we'll keep suffering until someone is angry enough, all of us are angry enough to say, no, we're not going to allow this way to treat human beings. We'll have to solve it. Something has to be done, but it has to be intelligent and just and caring and all the rest of it. But not enough of us are. I'm not angry enough. You're not angry enough. We're not angry enough. So we don't risk our life enough for it. And look at the Jews in Jerusalem at the moment that are risking the soldiers who are refusing to fight in the territories. Bravely. The men and women and the philosophers there, they're in a minority group, but they're speaking out. Wow, you can't imagine how they could speak so. But they've been taken no notice of by the majority, who are frightened and silent, and then the government, who takes advantage of that for cruelty and the rest for terror. So, okay, I'm just making two points. Slow to anger, I think, needs qualifying. I'm suggesting to myself, to you, slow to lose your temper, slow to be so keen on your own will that you get angry when you're not getting your own whims met. But if I were James, and I'm not, I'd be adding, but be quick to anger in the sense of refusal to allow injustice to prevail. Because that distinction I'm making, James doesn't, I offer it to you for your thought. But the rest, God's righteousness, the righteousness of God, a term that we find a lot used in the New Testament. I'll take you through that again, more quickly than I'd wish, but I hope clearly. The basic word in Hebrew is tzedek. That's the word justice. We know how God acts. It's very related to faith, in fact. God acts according to who God is. God is righteous. Look, we haven't got the word there to look at. Yes, we have here. If you look at the word righteous, in English, if you look at it carefully, it's made up of two words, right, which you can see, but the best, that bit you can't see. It's actually the word wise. Righteous, if etymologically, is right wise. Wise as to what is right. Because you can think you're right when you're not, of course. But it's the wisdom to know what's right. That's righteousness, right wiseness, literally. Well, God acts consistent with who God is. God is just. Some people, again, misunderstanding the word, taking the word justice from the courtroom instead of from the scriptures. I've often had people say to me, oh, you talk too much about love. God is love, but God is also just. Notice, God is love, God is also just. And you've got to balance the two, love and justice. That's absolutely hopeless. Biblically, doesn't stand up. If God is love, then God's justice means God always acts lovingly. That's all it means. That's what it means to be just. To do what is right according to who you are. So there's a fidelity to who you are involved in the word justice. The Greek word, which is used in the New Testament, dike, go back to the Greek goddess dike, is about order in nature and in society. Now, let's not think Christianly, just think dike is when there's order, when everything's in its right place, often involving injustice, as we would see it, but where the king is thing and people are subservient, it should be subservient, and people have their right role in this hierarchical community and all that kind of thing. People do, slaves do what they slaves should do, women are in the woman's place in the all of that. That's dike, to act according to right order. So God is just means God always acts in accordance with who God is. Who is God? Once again, we're getting close to what I said about faith, and the two words have to be intertwined. Guess just here, a beautiful statement of who God is. Psalm 77, verse 7. Is the Lord's rejection final? Will he never show favor again? Is his faithful love gone forever? Does his word come to an end for all time? Does God forget to show mercy? In anger, does God shut off his tenderness? That's the plea. And the answer is, of course, no. So in spite of the fact that Jerusalem is collapsing, in spite of the fact that the country is being torn apart by the Assyrians, in spite of all of that, in spite of the fact that everything seems terrible, in spite of Bali, in spite of all this, the prayer is saying, and the community are praying in prayer, they're tempted to think this, but they're saying, no, it can't be that. Surely not. God's faithful love is always there. God is just. So God can't be behind this or wanting it or whatever. The Book of Lamentations about the destruction of Jerusalem, beautiful text. If you Chapter 3 is worth a read. I used some of it in my homily yesterday. The whole chapter is one of the most painful chapters in the Bible. If you're ever in really despair, nearly, read chapter 3 of the book of Lamentations, and he'll give you words for it, because he's really at the absolute end. There's nothing, nowhere to go. And having gone through the terrible pain, he ends up with this extraordinary statement, Lamentations 3:22. He says, I know what I'll say to my soul. I know how to get courage back. The favours of the Lord are not all past. His kindnesses are not exhausted. Every morning they are renewed. Great is his faithfulness. So God's justice, the righteousness of God, the justice and righteousness are two English words translated exactly the same word in Greek. The right wiseness of God, or the justice of God, are all about faith in this God who will never do other than love, who is the source of love, who is the father, the mother, who is the gentle, faithful, loving God. And that is God's justice. And so we have a prayer there that's his prayer, that they will have the justice of God. Meaning, what God is, what Jesus is, we will become, because we're graced with Jesus' life. So that we too, he's saying to the community, will learn to be just the way God is just, to be just, righteous, the way Jesus is righteous, to be faithful to love to the end, whatever the situation, and not to respond to love, which we can do when we're angry, with violence. Or as Paul says, overcome evil. You must. You can't let evil continue. Overcome evil, comma, with good. Get rid of the darkness by turning on the light or lighting a candle, not by becoming darker than the dark and beating the dark with more darkness.